Welcome to episode 4 of The Good, The Bad, and The Wretched. I'm Josh from the Video Graveyard, and I'm sitting here with Chris.
How's it going, Josh?
It's going great. My apologies if I burst into laughter right now. For whatever reason, We were busting it out to I'm the Man by Anthrax for some reason, and now it's totally stuck in my head, as ridiculous as it is.
He did about 5 false starts before we hit this moment, so...
Yeah, I couldn't get it together to get going here. Anyway, I think I've got it together now, so here we go with episode 4. So this time around, we're going to be featuring John Carpenter.
Yes,
one of the most influential directors, I think, on both of us as horror and genre fans.
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, certainly one of the ones I remember the most from when I was young as far as getting into a director.
Yep. And one of those guys, and I like to bring this up because Josh loves me bringing it up, is this is the director who made me fall in love with Kurt Russell.
That is. I knew you were going to bring up Kurt Russell, so I thought we'd just get it over with right away.
Well, there'll be some more Kurt Russell later.
Yeah, we're just going to talk about Kurt Russell quite a bit, so hopefully this gets it out of Chris's system.
Maybe. We'll see. Unless we talk about Overboard or something later.
Well, wow, I can't believe we're 4 episodes in and we've mentioned Overboard in 2 of them.
Well, you know, whatever.
maybe I should watch that again. Anyway, okay, so as always, we're going to... First, we're going to go over things we've been up to since the last podcast. So I'll go first. And I guess the first thing I want to mention is I revisited one of Lucio Fulci's classics, The Beyond. I bought the Arrow Films Blu-ray release.
And from what you were just telling me before we started, you don't find it to be one of his classics really anymore.
Well, no. It is still one of his classics. Hmm. But I did find it to not be maybe as good of a movie as I remember.
I always liked City of the Living Dead and Zombie better anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen Zombie and The Beyond the most. I've only seen City of the Living Dead a few times because that priest hanging himself at the beginning used to freak me out really bad. But I definitely am going to be revisiting that one again quite soon as well.
So what's the verdict on Beyond then?
Well, The Beyond is a collection of really awesome set pieces.
So kind of like City of the Living Dead.
From what I remember, yeah. And I mean, as far as being a great movie, though, I don't know if I would go there. I mean, there's not a ton of character development.
No.
But it's got some great effects, and it's got some really cool scenes.
I find a lot of Fulci movies, though, don't really have any character development. He was a very artistic director, but I don't think his scripts were kind of weak most of the time.
Well, I thought Zombie did. I thought Zombie, I was kind of following them along on their little problem.
Yeah, but City of the Living Dead's also fairly confused.
Yeah, City of the Living Dead, I think, I mean, it's been a while since I've seen it, and I'm going to watch it again, but I think you're right. I think it's kind of more along this line where it's more of a series of cool scenes. Like, the thing with The Beyond is, I mean, I'm not going to spoil anything, but I will say that the ending of The Beyond is pretty epic.
The ending of The Beyond is definitely the best thing of The Beyond.
And it's awesome, and it does tie the movie together quite well, and you are sort of sitting there like...
It's pretty messed up, too.
Yeah, and it's really cool. So, I mean, for the ending, because that's what I walk away from The Beyond with, and that's what I remember about The Beyond, is the ending, because it really is quite...
Well, kind of like when you get one of those movies, right, where the ending just is so wow that you can kind of forgive some of the stuff that came before it when you walk out of when the credits roll and you just sit there going... What the frig just happened? That was amazing.
Exactly.
So you can kind of forgive his loose plotting, I suppose.
Yeah, and it is a classic. And I mean, David Warbeck and Catriona McCall are both great actors, and like for genre actors. And I really enjoyed both their performances. I used to have a big crush on her. And I also found, like I said, the set pieces were pretty amazing.
I think he did a pretty good job. Like, it was set in New Orleans, right?
Yeah.
So I think he did a good job nailing the New Orleans stuff, especially at the very beginning.
Yeah, the beginning there was like the prologue. It's filmed in sepia and it's gory, but it's pretty cool, and it sort of sets the tone. And but it's just, you know, some of the plot devices as the movie goes on get a little complicated. There's like this Book of the Dead this Journal of the Dead or what that keeps sort of popping up. And you know, just some scenes, just things just happen that are a little too convenient. Like There's a scene in a library where a guy falls off a ladder and gets eaten by tarantulas.
That scene's awesome.
It's awesome. You're right. It's totally awesome. But it's just, why are there all these tarantulas in the library?
Because Fulci says so.
Yeah. And, you can see
what Lucio wants, Lucio gets.
You can see that some of tarantulas are puppets and, but it's, but maybe that's Blu-ray, sometimes Blu-ray.
No, it looked like that on VHS.
Yeah, I know. But I think it looks a little more like it on Blu-ray.
Could be, because Terminator really, that stuff in Terminator on Blu-ray is just like you're watching it, especially with the new 4K one, where he's like prying his eye out in Terminator.
Right.
You're like, wow, that looks fake.
Oh, wow. Eh?
Yeah.
Well, it's The Beyond's still a pretty great movie, like as far as an overall entertainment experience. Mm-hmm. But as far as like a good movie, if we're going by like plot and character and stuff like that, it's not all that.
Yeah, and the readers of the site can expect a review from you very soon, since it was their choice.
Yeah, it was their choice.
It was their choice last month for the Pick Our Brain.
Yeah.
And I'd just like to take this opportunity to remind anyone who's listening that we do this monthly, where we let you guys vote on three titles, and we say which one of these titles you want us to review. So if we'd love it if you guys could get into that and give us some votes and make a decision for us and make us watch stuff. Sometimes you make us watch garbage. Yeah. Sometimes you make us watch something awesome.
I'll be honest. A lot of the times I'm sitting there watching the votes and sort of praying that certain ones don't get picked because I don't want to watch
them. But I just wanted to mention that just in case you guys want to interact with us more. We really love doing the Pick Our Brains, but we'd really like to see a lot more votes on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So just another note about The Beyond is Fabio Frizzi's music score. It's that's quite great as well. One of my favorites of the Italian movies. And there was a lot of great scores back in the day with the Italian horror movies, but this one definitely stands out as being one of the best ones, especially one of the best non-goblin ones. So The Beyond, I mean I'd recommend it. It's obviously a Euro horror classic. But it's just not the best plot driven movie.
Do you think people should try and pick up the Arrow Blu-ray, or should they wait? Because isn't Grindhouse releasing it?
Well, Grindhouse, I think Anchor Bay released it initially in that tin.
No, I mean on Blu-ray though.
And then Grindhouse released it on DVD. I haven't heard anything about a domestic release.
Oh, okay. I thought Grindhouse was maybe putting that one out. Okay.
Yeah. But anyway. Yeah, I'd say pick up the Arrow DVD, or Blu-ray, sorry, if you can. I mean, it's a pretty awesome set. It's a three-disc set. It's got a Blu-ray, a DVD, and then another DVD with more special features. So definitely worth the pickup. It's also got a booklet with a little essay by Eli Roth.
Lobby cards too, right?
What's that?
Lobby cards too in that one?
Because
Arrow tries to put a lot of lobby cards in
there. No lobby cards, but it had a booklet.
Reversible art?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's one thing I watched. The other thing I watched was kind of a throwback to my youth, and that was Wayne's World.
You watched Wayne's World?
I did. And I like Wayne's World for what it is, but it definitely, I didn't feel like it holds up well.
I blame Wayne's World for making me headbang every time I hear Bohemian Rhapsody on the radio.
That's true. That's true. I guess, I don't know. I mean, I think things are a little tainted for me because I guess just knowing a little more about Mike Myers, and it seems like he was a bit of a prima donna on set there, kind of changed things a little for me. And it's really dated, but not in the best way. And I find it kind of slowed down quite a bit.
Is it Wayne's World 1 or 2 that has Alice Cooper in it?
1.
That's the best part.
It is. It's a pretty great part.
Where Alice Cooper's explaining the history of Cleveland. Or yeah. Milwaukee, sorry.
Milwaukee. Yeah, it's pretty funny. And Garth is great as usual. Tia Carrere, I felt, really brought it down a bit just because her band's so terrible.
Oh, yeah. Her cover of, like, Fire by Jimi Hendrix.
And Ballroom Blitz.
Ballroom Blitz. And then she also had that Why You Want to Break My Heart, which was an original song, which was horrible.
What, did she write that?
It was like an original song that she performed. I don't know if she wrote it.
Yeah.
But it was awful.
Yeah, I guess watching Wayne being so into this band, I think he just became less cool.
It did have one awesome unreleased Red Hot Chili Peppers song on the soundtrack.
Oh, did it?
Sika Mika Niko.
Oh, okay.
That's never been on any albums, and it's on the soundtrack, and it was in the movie.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it's the part where he's driving his car, pulling all the, like, red vines out of the dispenser Above the mirror. Yeah. That was the Chili Pepper song in there.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Cool. And, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. The Robert Patrick cameo was kind of funny, too.
I don't remember him in that.
Yeah, like Wayne gets pulled over by a cop, and the cop comes up to the car.
Oh, it's a Terminator 2
Robert
reference?
Robert Patrick, yeah.
So, oh, okay.
But again, like, you know, I was watching it with a kid, and he had no idea what that meant.
I saw that in theaters. I saw both of them in theaters.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Wayne's World 2 was not nearly as good.
Well.
And Wayne's World's also responsible for that slew of terrible Saturday Night Live movies that came out after.
Yeah. Like, it's Pat.
It's Pat and Superstar and Stuart Saves His Family. And
oh, God.
Coneheads.
Well, Coneheads was better than the first three we mentioned, at least.
Yeah. So, anyway, I know a lot of people, Wayne's World's really near and dear to their hearts, so I'm not going to be too hard. And it was directed by Penelope Spheeris, who, you know, has you know,
Suburbia.
Done some pretty cool things in her life. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'll be revisiting Wayne's World anytime soon. And, yeah, that's pretty much all I got for things I've watched lately, because I've been watching, still trying to catch up on Breaking Bad.
You need to catch up on Breaking Bad.
I know. I'm getting there.
It's my turn.
Yep.
Well, I don't have much. I really don't. I haven't been watching a lot this week. What I watched was pretty hefty, though. I watched Never Sleep Again, The Elm Street Legacy.
Did you watch the whole thing?
I watched the whole thing.
Holy. Was it in one sitting?
No, two.
Okay.
I kind of fell asleep halfway through it.
Uh-huh.
I made the mistake of watching it late at night when I started watching it. So I'd worked all day. And it's like late. I was like, oh, watch this. And then I passed out.
But it's like 4 hours long, right?
Yeah, it's about 4 hours long.
Yeah.
It follows the entire series from first to last, like to New Nightmare. Doesn't touch on the remake, thankfully.
Does it touch on Freddy vs. Jason?
Yes.
Okay.
And it also has Freddy's Nightmares, a segment about Freddy's Nightmares.
Okay, that was the TV show, right?
Yeah, which was the TV show, which is like an anthology show, kind of like Tales from the Crypty with Freddy as the Crypt Keeper.
Was Freddy in that?
Yeah,
was it Robert Englund?
Robert Englund was Freddy. Okay, he kind of introduced the stories. Every once in a while, he would take part in the stories. It was really a cheap show, but it had a lot of cool people directed it. Your buddy Mick Garris directed an episode. Bunch of other people directed episodes. But it was cool. It spent most of its time, obviously, on Wes Craven's original.
Right.
Which is fine by me, because I consider the first Nightmare on Elm Street to be a horror classic.
Of course.
Like, I feel like I would be perfectly happy if that was the only Freddy movie.
You know, the first Nightmare on Elm Street, I remember when I was a kid, I remember having a sleepover with four of my friends vividly and watching Nightmare on Elm Street.
Well, yeah, and
like, being scared shitless. I checked under my bed for years.
Well,
literally.
Like we talked about in our first episode, Nightmare on Elm Street was my gateway to horror movies.
Yeah.
Because I saw the clip from it with the body and Amanda West in the body bag.
Oh, yeah.
And It had a lot of stuff about part two where they like were talking about how it's such a gay movie, because there's a lot of like homosexual undertones in it that they didn't, a lot of times they didn't realize that they were in the movie.
I didn't pick up on that.
And also like the main actor, Mark Patton, was actually gay too. So he's laughing about it now. That
wasn't it that guy from Street Trash, James something?
No, Mark Patton was the main guy.
Was he in part two?
Yeah. And then Clue Gallagher was a dad.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but
who am I thinking of?
I have no idea. Rob, it could have been the gym teacher guy you were thinking of.
No, it's that James guy from the Street Trash. I can't remember his last name.
No, he's not in that, I don't think. I could be wrong. I'm sure someone will correct us if we're wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's cool. It talks about
James Lorenz. That's who I'm thinking of.
James Lorenz, okay.
Yeah.
It talks about, isn't he in Frankenhooker, James Lorenz?
Yeah, I think he's the star of Elm Street too. Maybe I'm totally tripping.
Okay, but it talks about Dream Warriors, which is cool because it's Wes Craven coming back and everything. It was just very interesting because it wasn't all just talking heads interviews. All their segments and their intros and everything were like kind of, they had these chapter breaks. They were kind of claymation animated stuff with Freddy and everything. It didn't feel like 4 hours long.
So it was talking heads and scenes. Was there behind the scenes footage?
Yeah, there was some behind the scenes footage, some behind the scenes photographs and stuff like that. They talked about how Dream Warriors had such an insane amount of practical effects that they were surprised they could pull it off. Robert Shea, who was the head of New Line Cinema forever, admitted that those are the movies that basically made that studio.
Wow.
And Yeah, it was interesting because I don't think Nightmare on Elm Street is not my favorite franchise, is my least favorite franchise of the three big ones. Friday the 13th, Halloween, and Nightmare on Elm Street. Nightmare on Elm Street's my least favorite of those three.
Yeah, I totally
agree.
I had a real hard time getting through that
one. And I mean, I respected what it took to make those movies now that I've seen the documentary. Because you have to think, if you have Jason in a wood slashing someone up, doesn't take much, really. Like, not much imagination, just effects. Whereas in Freddy, they had so many different deaths that they had to dream up and all this weird stuff in it. And
yeah.
It was kind of cool. One of my favorite parts was when they were talking about part four, which is the Dream Master. You remember at the end of Dream Master, Freddy's chest is all bulged and you can see the souls of all the people pushing up against his chest.
Oh, yeah, I think Linnea Quigley
was in that. Yeah, yeah. She's actually in the documentary. They have behind the scenes photos of her.
Oh, really?
And like, they have a scene where they're directing that scene and they're like, Linnea, push your body up against the thing more. Push your body up against the thing more. So people could see her boobs. And then the thing falls over on everybody. Pretty awesome.
Right on.
It was directed by Daniel Ferrans. He also went on and he did the Crystal Lake Memories.
Okay.
Which is the 6-hour documentary about the Friday the 13th series,
which
I do have sitting at home and I haven't watched that either. I'm a little bit behind on those. And he also wrote the sixth Halloween movie. He wrote Curse of Michael Myers.
So has there been one of these retrospectives on the Halloween series?
No.
Wasn't there one called like 25 Years of Terror or something?
Yeah, that was just about part one.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Okay. And I think this Daniel Ferrans guy, he also made his name was Jason.
Right.
Which was a really lame kind of documentary about Friday the 13th movies, because it just focused on Jason and how he was an iconic figure and all this stuff. And I thought it was kind of boring. So I'm hoping Crystal Lake Memories is better.
Yeah, they both look pretty solid. I wonder if there'll be a Halloween type one on the new box set.
If they do a Halloween one, they should hire this Daniel Ferrans guy.
Cool.
But yeah, it was a lot of good. It's really good. It's out on Blu-ray by Image, so people should pick that up. The only other thing I have to mention in this is I read a series of books called the Miriam Black series, I guess you'd call it. It's by an author called Chuck Wendig, who he also apparently I learned he works with Lance Wyler a lot, who's Josh is familiar with because we've interviewed him for the site and he's made movies like Head Trauma and Last Broadcast.
Yeah,
it's a series about she's a 22-year-old girl. Very sarcastic, very rude, doesn't give a shit about anything, but she gets a power to be able to touch someone and see how they die.
Okay.
And it takes...
That'd be trippy.
Yeah, a little bit. It's a three series books. The first book's called Blackbirds. The second book's called The Mockingbird. And the third book is called The Cormorant.
Okay.
I read them all in this past week.
Wow.
Like back to back to back. They're pretty entertaining little books. They're kind of like horror fantasy.
Right.
There's horror elements in it, but it's mostly about her like trying to solve all these things. People from the first book ended up being wound back into the plot of the third book and things like that. They're pretty cheap to pick up. They're from Angry Robot is the company that published them, I believe. So I just wanted to recommend those real quick.
Cool. So are they easy to get? Can you get them on Amazon or do you have to go to a website?
You can get them on Amazon. You can get them in like local bookstores.
Okay.
They're pretty easy to come by. They're mass market paperback.
Cool.
Okay.
Great.
And that's all I did have for what I've been up to.
Great. That's awesome. All right. So we'll get into just a few news items we have. So the first one I have is just, this might be a little more old news by the time you hear this, but the first thing I wanted to mention is just that Scream Factory, which is one of our favorite DVD labels.
It definitely is.
Recently announced that they're pulling the collector's edition of Life Force. It sounds like there was some sort of... legal problem, and they're taking a few of the special features off. So they're taking off the vintage Making of Life Force featurette, and they've also had to change the artwork a bit and put the original theatrical artwork on the front.
Yeah, and no slipcover anymore.
Yeah. So, but the price has gone down quite a bit, but what this ends up doing, of course, is making the collector's edition a real collector's edition.
Which makes me happy that I bought it the day it came out.
I mean, I think most fans would have bought it right away, you know, because Mathilda May in high def is definitely something a lot of us wanted to see. But
don't get me started on boobs again. We talked about enough about those last episode.
Anyway, I always think it's important for genre fans to know about this stuff. So that's why I want to bring it up. Just because, you know, sometimes you find out about this stuff really late and then it's too late, of course.
And so, I think the new one was released on September 9th.
Yeah, that's true. And yeah. So you can't get the old one anymore through the Screen Factory website. But I think there are still some out there kicking around. So if you don't have the
I can sell you one for $200.
Really? Yeah. I say, oh, you could sell one for
$200. I will sell mine for $200.
Well, no, you know me. I will. I'll never let that thing go now.
You never let anything go.
No, that's true. Right, so there's that, and I also wanted to mention some big news for horror TV fans this week is that it was announced that there's going to be a Walking Dead spinoff show. Well, a pilot's been ordered, at least by AMC. I know Chris isn't a fan, but I am. So the same people involved with Walking Dead, Robert Kirkman, Gail Ann Hurd, and David Alpert are all involved in this new
pilot. I'm a fan of the comic.
What's that?
I'm a fan of the comic.
Yeah, and I haven't read the comic, but I do know that I do like the show quite a bit. So I'm not sure what I think of this. I mean, I think the idea is to start like a, you know, start following another group of survivors in a different part of the country. So my initial gut reaction to this is I think that they shouldn't be doing it. I think it's cashing in on something that's really popular right now. And I think they're going to oversaturate the market.
I'm just wondering when zombies are going to stop being the it thing. Because I'm tired of them.
Well, and it's going to happen. So
it is going to happen.
And it might happen by the time they get this thing out.
Could be.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think it's a bit of a mistake. But, you know, I'm sure people are going to be somewhat interested.
You can tell the cycle, though, is starting to come to an end when they start making a whole bunch of zombie comedies, like, aimed at teenagers, like that Life After Beth that's coming out soon.
That looks okay, though.
Yeah, but it's like, that's like a death knell for that subgenre, like being super popular, is when they start throwing it into comedy, you know that it's starting to reach its end of saturation, I think.
It's possible, but there have been zom-coms for
Well, yeah, there was Warm Bodies, which I did enjoy.
Yeah.
There was my Boyfriend's Back from 93, which was pretty fun.
Yeah.
But I mean, I just feel like the mainstream popularity of zombie movies is coming towards its end.
Yeah. And I just think, also, there's so many cool stories you can be telling. I just, you know, I'm getting really tired. I mean, I'm sure we'll be talking about this lots over the time we do the podcast. But, you know, just the whole thing of, like, original ideas. And, you know, do we really need to show another Walking Dead show? I mean, isn't there another million other TV ideas we could come up with? So, anyway, I guess we'll see what happens with this. And the only other thing I wanted to mention is I saw a trailer for a movie called The Pyramid. That's coming out in December. It's by Gregory Levasseur, who works a lot with Alexander Aja.
Yeah, he usually co-writes stuff with him.
Yeah, so this is a movie about an Egyptian pyramid that kind of looks like a cross between, I don't know, like The Mummy and, like, you know, some sort of Egyptian-themed movie.
Where, but
like,
more gory?
You know, the Curse of Tutankhamun and stuff like that. But they, like, get trapped in a pyramid, so, and then there's creatures. So the trailer kind of looked like...
You think it would be gory then?
I don't know if it'll be gory, but it looked like kind of like The Descent, sort of.
In a pyramid.
With, you know, booby-trapped walls and stuff like that.
I just hope it's not as... I hope it's better than the last pyramid-based movie I saw, which was Aliens vs. Predator.
Ugh, yeah. Anyway, it looked cool, but who knows? So that's coming out in December, so I guess we'll see. Do you have any news items, Chris?
I have a couple, not many. Then we can move on to our topic.
Oh, one more, sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
One more. And also, big news for me was one of my favorite movies, River's Edge, got announced that it's coming out on Blu-ray on January 13th by Scorpion today. And that's awesome.
Teen suicide depresso movie with Keanu.
Yeah, I love that movie. And Tim Hunter's going to be doing a commentary, and I'm really looking forward to that.
That movie is definitely a movie that touched a pulse for people in our age range when it's a great movie.
Yeah. Crispin Glover, yeah, Keanu... Ione Sky.
Yeah, Ione Sky used to be hot.
She was so hot in that. Her name was Clarissa. I used to love that name because of her.
Her and that and Say Anything.
Yeah.
She's pretty hot in that too.
Yeah.
Anyway, right. Moving on to mine. I only have a couple here. If we want to talk about TV, I just saw kind of a full length teaser for American Horror Story Freak Show that comes out October 8th. And I'm so stoked.
Right on.
Kathy Bates is the bearded lady. Sarah Paulson's a two-headed woman. So it's going to be great. I love freak shows. I'm really into the history of freak shows and things like that, and I think it'll be fun.
Right. I've always wanted to do a freak show.
I think it would be better. It'll be better than Coven, which was the last season, because that was just like the craft kind of. And I like the craft. I don't mind the craft, but Coven was my least favorite season of the three so far.
Were there hot goth girls in it?
Not really.
Well, it's not like the craft then.
I guess. So I just wanted to mention that I'm excited for that. But for actual news, my news just pertains to two trailers I've seen and one movie that's finally been announced. The movie that's been announced is coming from Massacre Video. And I believe it's only a DVD-only release. It's a little ditty called Mr. No Legs.
Right on.
Which I have never seen, but if you go to YouTube and you type in Mr. No Legs, you'll see one of the greatest scenes ever as a cop who's got no legs kicks some ass ninja style.
It's, yeah, I mean, I remember I saw that trailer and it looked pretty awesome.
Yeah, so I'm excited for that. I don't really know much about Massacre Video. I know they've put out like 555 on DVD and a bunch of other titles.
Oh, that's a big seller, right, on the underground circuit.
Yeah, they seem to be one of those like fanboy companies that everyone drools over. Right. Apparently, I think they were releasing that Crossbearer movie, which has been like had an underground explosion that I don't quite understand.
Yeah, that company has really done a lot that way. Like they seem, are they putting out a limited release of Mr. No Legs?
I haven't heard any real details. It was just announced so far.
Yeah, that's an interesting movie because it looks like such a low budget kind of weird movie. But Richard Jekyll's actually the star, who's like,
really
who. Well, I mean, he was on the downside of his career, but still, like, he's a big name to be in that movie.
Well, and I mean,
like, it was such a weird movie.
I'm hoping it'll be another Crippled Masters situation, because Crippled Masters is amazing.
That deserves a special edition. Maybe they'll put that out next.
I hope so, because all that's it's only out on DVD in a shitty little low-budget company.
It's one of those, like, 10-packs, right?
No, I have it on a single release.
Oh, do you? I have it in, like, some, like,
I would just like Crippled Masters. I want Crippled Masters to be Blu-rayed.
Yeah, even the trailer for that is just crazy.
So awesome.
Anyway, watch both those trailers,
yeah,
people.
Go check those trailers out. Maybe we'll even post one on our Facebook. We'll see.
I think we should post them both, just for fun.
Yeah, sure. And the two trailers I saw that I just wanted to quickly mention before we move on is, I didn't really know this was coming out, but there's a sequel coming out to Monsters.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up,
The 2010 Gareth Edwards?
Edwards.
Gareth Edwards movie, who most people know now because he directed the Godzilla that recently came out. I'm intrigued. I really am. Because, Josh, you said that Monsters is a really good movie.
I really dug Monsters.
Like, I haven't seen it, but I plan to. But now I think it might just give me more motivation to see the first one now that I know there's a sequel coming out. Because you never know.
Well, it's interesting that you, because I watched that trailer too. I was actually going to bring that up as well. And I think it looks terrible.
Looks terrible?
Based on, well, because I'm basing it on the original.
Oh, okay.
And it doesn't look anything like the original.
Well, it probably isn't, but
but it looks more like an action movie. So it's just an interesting thing. Like how, you know, you having not seen the original thought the trailer looked cool.
I didn't think it looked cool.
It just, yeah.
I just thought I'd mention it because I thought it was interesting that it was coming out.
Yeah, apparently there's going to be 5 of them.
What?
Yeah, apparently it's going to become a big franchise. And I believe I read that Michael Bay might be directing one of them.
Okay, well,
like part 4 or something.
I'm now uninterested.
So whoever is doing part 2, I can't remember the director's name, he's doing part 3 as well. And then I heard Michael Bay might be doing part 4.
I'm uninterested
4.
Now. As soon as Michael Bay's name comes into the mix, I'm done.
Well, check out the first one because it's pretty good.
I do have it at home, so maybe I'll have to now. Yeah. And the other trailer I saw that I wanted to mention was the Red Band trailer for ABCs of Death 2.
Yeah.
I watched that and I was like, yes, please, now.
It's so gory.
I'm actually one of those people who actually really enjoyed the first one because I enjoyed the concept of it. I mean, sure, there's going to be dogs in it. It's 26 shorts. What are you expecting, right?
Right.
But I mean, I saw it in theaters and I really had a good time with the first one, and they screened it out here one night only.
Right.
And I went and saw it and I actually came away and I was quite entertained and I had a lot of fun with it. The second one looks way gorier.
Wait, like that trailer, it's just wall to wall gore.
Yeah. And I'm also excited about some of the people who are doing segments because Vincenzo Natalie's doing one and he did Cube and Splice.
Yep.
we're representing Canadians here because he's Canadian, and the next people I'm mentioning are Canadians. We got the Shaska sisters,
yeah,
who did American Mary and Dead Hooker in a Trunk, and yeah, are doing See No Evil 2.
Yeah.
And E.L. Katz is doing one, who, he's kind of cool because he did this movie called Cheap Thrills that's getting a lot of hype right now that I really want to see. So I'd like to check out Cheap Thrills, but I definitely am stoked for ABCs of Death 2.
Right on. Yeah, it looks pretty cool.
And that's all I have for news.
Great. Well, I guess we'll get right into our topic then. So as mentioned before, we're going to be talking about John Carpenter. So I don't know. Like, my first memories of John Carpenter are probably just perusing the video stores and trying to think of what the first Carpenter movie I saw was. And I don't know. I guess
the thing about him is he was, I remember this because back in the day when we used to go to the video store and look at all the VHS, well, I think he was pretty much the only guy who got his name above the title.
Yeah, it was always like John Carpenter's
John
Christine.
Carpenter's Prince of Darkness. Yeah. John Carpenter's Christine. Like, yeah, that you saw that when you were a kid in a video store. You're like, this guy must be important.
Yeah, what was cool about it is that really did make you appreciate directors, right? Like,
mm-hmm,
I don't know, if I wasn't a Carpenter fan, maybe I wouldn't be as into movies as I, like, I don't know, maybe I'm overdoing it, but it really made, it brought the director to the forefront.
It definitely makes you aware of them,
yeah,
when his name's over the title, because you could watch a movie by someone and then watch another one of theirs a couple years later and not realize it's the same person.
Yeah.
So, like, once you saw that name, John Carpenter, above the title, you were like, I'm going to check out more of this guy's. And you would actively seek out his stuff. Because this is back before the days of IMDb where you could just plug in anything you wanted and figure it out, right? So it was cool because you started recognizing these names and then you started looking for their stuff. Like, it wasn't just John Carpenter. It was guys like Wes Craven and things like that.
Yeah.
You would realized that there was these guys out there who had made these multiple cool movies, and then you would actually hunt them down. And I think you're right, it did kind of fuel our appreciation for directors in a way when we were kids.
Well, just seeing his name there just made him larger than life to me.
Well, yeah, because I'm like, who's this guy that he gets his name above the title all the time?
Exactly.
He must be really important.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, I think my first one of his would have to have been probably, I want to say, Big Trouble in Little China.
Really, eh?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
I think so. I think I saw Halloween after that.
Yeah, I think mine was probably Escape from New York.
Maybe.
But,
I honestly can't remember.
I can't remember either. But definitely a force to be reckoned with. And he had quite the run of greatness back in the 80s.
Oh, he definitely did.
Yeah. And
late 70s, early 80s, he was untouchable.
Oh, my God, yeah. And unfortunately, his career sort of petered out a bit. I'm not sure why. I'm sure I think a lot of it is just the fact that he has not been able to make movies for the money he would like to make movies for.
Well, and I think the landscape has changed since the 80s, because in the 80s, people were willing to take more risks.
Yeah.
Studios were willing to take a chance on these weird ideas and everything, whereas these days, they just want remake, sequel. Stuff that they are like already established brand name made into a film or something, yeah, like that, right? Like, back then there was a lot, it seemed like it was a lot more free back in the 80s for people to do original stuff. And I know we harp on that a lot, but I think it's true.
Well, and the other thing is, I mean, I think it does come with age too. I mean, you know, when you're a young director and you're wanting to be a director and you're kind of even enjoying, like, I even know when I was trying to make movies when I was younger, I really enjoyed it. But as I got older, I'm like, fuck this.
You get cynical. You know?
And I would imagine being John Carpenter, you know, as you're getting up there in age, it's kind of like, all right, you know, I've already done all this. It's hard work. I'm, you know, I don't want to do this anymore.
Well,
I think John Carpenter still loves making movies, but I think he needs the right thing to come to him. But it's just like Romero. I mean, George Romero's having a hard time getting a movie made.
Yeah.
Just because people won't give him money anymore.
Well, that's why
he does the same old shit.
Well, yeah, that's why he kind of did that Empire of the Dead comic for Marvel, is because that was intended to be a movie.
Yeah.
And then he couldn't get the funding for it, so they just went that avenue with it, I guess. But really, I'd like Romero to do something that's not a dead movie.
That's true. But I'm not going to knock on John Carpenter's later career, because the guy fucking rocks.
John Carpenter? And, yeah. He's like the coolest dude.
So, like, whatever he does now, it doesn't fucking matter, because
He doesn't give a shit. He just walks around smoking cigarettes. He's like, fuck you, I had a good career.
He doesn't
care.
I remember, you know, one of my biggest regrets, actually, that I've I've had with celebrity encounters is I had the opportunity to go and see John Carpenter.
Yeah, Masters of Horror. When he was screwed it up.
And I didn't go.
You screwed it up.
I screwed it up. Stupid.
I can't forgive you.
I don't know what I was thinking.
I don't think I even knew you when that was going on, but I can't forgive. Actually, I did know you, but I can't forgive you.
I don't remember why I didn't go.
Because you're an idiot.
I think I just didn't want to be disappointed.
But like, didn't you went and you met Argento.
I met Argento, which
but you didn't go meet Carpenter. You got your priorities fucked.
Why? Anyway.
Just saying. Just
embarrassing.
Saying. Let's move on from ragging you.
So I think we should just do our usual thing here and we'll just throw out a title and yap about it. So I guess I'll go first.
Yeah, go first.
Probably my favorite. Well, this is there. I got a tie here, but
I know what you're starting with.
Let's go with a thing.
I knew you're starting with that. I knew thing it. Is you're so predictable.
Awesome. How many times have I said that so far? Three. Wow. I don't even really like to swear too much on here, but we're talking about John Carpenter. So, okay. So the thing is a remake of an older movie,
1951
Howard Hawks movie,
The Thing from Another World.
And John Carpenter, as you learn a few times today,
is fucking awesome.
Massive, but he's a massive fan of Howard Hawks and John Ford.
Definitely is.
Two of the, you know, great directors of the old Hollywood.
Yep.
And, Carpenter, decided to do his take on this movie.
And he thankfully didn't make it a carrot monster.
Correct. And he based it more on the book. I think it was called Who Goes There.
Yeah.
As opposed to Hawks's version of the
movie. I also remember, just kind of getting us off track a little, but I remember in Halloween, there's a scene where they're watching the original television, which is kind of cool.
The original Thing from Another World.
He was probably even thinking about remaking the movie way back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the thing is about a remote team that's at a station in Antarctica, and basically they find out that there's this other station that's basically been overrun and abandoned. So they go and find out what happened there, and they find this dog that's running around, and they find a bunch of dead people.
Yeah,
and they find this block of ice. So they take it back to their station to try and figure out what happened and why everyone died at this other station. And then this creature, it goes into the dog, basically.
They done fucked up, basically.
Yeah, so, okay, that's the only spoiler I'm going to do. And then what happens is the creature can basically take over whatever it comes into contact with and replicate the person or the creature that it's come into contact with. So it comes to a point where basically any of them can be infected by this sort of virus that turns them into this monster creature.
Mm-hmm.
And what can I say about the thing? I mean, it's probably one of the best makeup effects movies that's ever been made.
It's still a great makeup effects movie. It still holds up.
It's probably one of the best isolation movies that's ever been made.
It makes CG look like shit.
Yeah. The whole movie shot in the whole movie takes place in this sort of bunker that's in the middle of winter in Antarctica. But it's like, you know, they can't leave because it's so cold outside.
That gave it such a we're stranded here and we have nowhere to go edge to it, which really made it more effective for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it, you know, it brings up all the, you know, there's all the character, you know, the usual things that happen in a situation like that.
Oh, yeah, the tensions.
The infighting, the tensions, the people that don't want to be tested because they don't know if, you know, they're scared to find out if they're infected. So you never know who's infected, who's not infected. And yeah, Rob Bottin's creature effects are absolutely stunning.
They're amazing. Yeah. Still, I said.
I think Bottin did pretty much everything. I think he actually might have had a nervous breakdown. He had some sort of breakdown on set just because he was working so much.
When you look at those sometimes, though, it's hard to imagine how he even pulled some of them off.
Oh, it's unreal. I mean, Stan Winston did the dog, I believe, but Bottin did everything else. And, like, some of those things, like there's a head monster that turns into a spider, and it's just unbelievable. And Chris's buddy, Kurt Russell, as the star as Mac MacReady, is just amazing. And I can't say enough good things about
Kurt Russell's amazing in general.
And Keith David's awesome too. He's the he's sort of MacReady's sort of
Don't forget about
nemesis.
Wilford Brimley.
Yeah,
I'm surprised he doesn't run around asking him if they ate their oatmeal. But yeah, that's a great movie. I'm surprised now, though. If I didn't realize it, but it was a flop when it came out.
It was a flop when it came out. Yeah.
It's just like, I guess home video gave it like that life.
Yeah, I mean, it's surprising with a lot of movies from back in the day, like how they were flops. And but, you know, that's, I guess that's how a cult movie becomes a cult movie. But I think it really was really damaging to Carpenter's ego at the time as well.
Probably, because that was like a dream project for him.
Yeah.
I would think.
Yeah.
And for it to not do so well.
Yeah.
But I mean, he moved on to good things.
He too. Did. And so, it was shot in BC, part of it.
Was it really?
All the outdoor stuff was shot in Stewart, BC, which is northern BC.
Huh.
Yeah, so that's where that's what doubled for Antarctica, which is pretty cool. And I think the remake, there was a remake to this movie a few years ago.
That was supposed to be a prequel.
Oh yeah, prequel. Sorry.
Whatever.
It was pretty much the same story though. Right?
Pretty much, I think. So I haven't requel, seen it. I can't requel. Tell you.
Well, it reeked anyway. Anyway,
I've seen it and it reeked?
I think that was also shot in Stewart. Yeah, I did see it. And it was okay. It was okay.
Yeah, but it was all CG monsters, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it was sort of there, right? Like, I wasn't watching it hating it like I was the Fog remake.
Were you watching it the entire time thinking, man, I could use some Kurt Russell right now?
Hell yeah. Or some Keith David, because they were both awesome.
Well, Keith David's badass.
Keith David's awesome. I saw Keith David in an airport, and I was starstruck. I couldn't even say anything to the guy.
Wow.
So that's my first pick.
Okay. I'm going to pick the obvious one for my first pick because it's my favorite horror movie of all time. Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
Of course I'm going to pick that.
Of course.
Thing about Halloween is I don't remember the first time I saw it. But I think it might have been one of those situations like with Texas Chainsaw where I wasn't really into it as much as I should have been.
Right.
Because when you're young, you're kind of like, when you're young and you get into horror movies, you're kind of looking for that edge that like, oh, this is forbidden. I shouldn't be watching this. And when you watch both of those movies, they're not violent or bloody particularly at all.
It's true. When I was young, I was all about Jason.
Yeah, because they were bloody, right?
Yeah.
People being hacked up. Halloween, what works for me for Halloween is like, a lot of people give it credit for inventing the slasher movie, which I don't really, because I think Black Christmas more invented slasher movies than Halloween did, because Black Christmas had the POV and the calls are coming from the house stuff.
Yeah.
But what Halloween does so well, and that was emulated, that it just gets under your skin. Michael Myers is unstoppable in that movie, and he's always popping up behind people and just scaring the shit out of you. He's sitting up when you think he's dead. He's just doing all this stuff. I think the best thing about that movie is the fact that they don't really give him any backstory.
No, I mean, that's what they fucked up a lot of these remakes.
Like, it opens with him killing his sister when he's a child, escaping the asylum and going after Jamie Lee Curtis and her friends.
Yeah.
And that's it. You don't know anything really about Michael Myers apart from the fact he's disturbed and that he's unstoppable. He just plows through people. Donald Pleasance is there saying people, he's the boogeyman. Stay away from him, you know? And you're just sitting there going like, fuck yeah, he's the boogeyman. That guy's scaring me, right? And it's just, the stuff Carpenter does with that movie is just brilliant, right?
Oh, yeah.
His theme music and his score, brilliant. Oh. His theme music is always my cell phone's ringtone in October.
Right on.
Because how can you not have that iconic music as part of your culture if you like horror movies? He does stuff in it that's very subtle that I really like. Like, there's the one death in it where Mike pins someone up to the wall.
Yeah.
And then all he does, instead of just making it gory and making it over the top, he pins him to the wall and then he just kind of tilts his head like a curious dog.
Oh, it's so great.
And that has always struck me as just so telling of Michael Myers without them giving me backstory. Because it's telling me he's kind of admiring his work, but at the same time, he's kind of just like looking at it like, huh. You know, like...
Yeah.
Kind of like maybe questioning what he's doing at times and things like that. I mean, maybe I'm reading too much into Michael Myers, but I think Carpenter was really brilliant the way he did that. And I feel that all that subtle stuff and the lack of violence makes it way more effective than it would have been if it was an outright gore fest.
That's true. And like you said too, like some of the shots like that are done by, I think Daniel Pearl was a cinematographer on that.
No, Dean Cundey.
Oh, Dean Cundey, sorry.
Daniel Pearl did Texas Chainsaw.
Of course, yeah. Boy, I'm really losing it today. But Dean Cundey, the way he does some shots, like there's a shot of Michael Myers when he's in a closet,
mm-hmm.
and just the way the light comes up and sort of reveals him is pretty awesome. And you're right, there's the shot where Jamie Lee Curtis is in the foreground and you can see Michael Myers in the background and he sits up. I mean, it's sort of an iconic shot.
Well, there's even
shot,
the shots of him, of the girls just walking down the street, talking like typical teenage girls, and you see him step out from behind some hedges behind them, and you're just like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
You know, it's just stuff like that that works. And I feel like I'm kind of disappointed they made so many Halloween sequels. But Carpenter did co-write the second one, which followed up right from when the first one left off, which I thought it was pretty good. But I feel like they just went too much for the violence.
Yeah, I mean, I liked Halloween too. I mean, Leo Rossi was pretty good as the sleazy guy.
Well, I liked it. The fact that it left, like, it followed the first one directly. The opening scenes of that are great.
Yeah.
And but it's just not quite the same.
I just felt like at like the ending, like the climax, just sort of stumbled a bit, went on a bit too long.
Well, yeah, and also Carpenter, we can blame him for the Halloween 3 thing about wanting to make it an annual series where it's like Twilight Zone and
was
theme.
That Carpenter's idea?
It was kind of his idea.
It's kind of a cool idea.
It's a cool idea, but they should have called it something else. Yeah. That's why people got so mad.
Well, I mean, it's Halloween 3 Season of the Witch. It's actually, for some reason,
should have just called it Season of the Witch.
I think it was maybe an excuse for Tommy Lee Wallace to direct something because they were buddies.
Could have been. But the only other thing I have to say about Halloween is it's such a good movie. And it really did make Donald Pleasance. That was his role.
Yeah.
I can't even really look at him anymore without thinking of Loomis, even though he was in movies like The Great Escape and was awesome in movies like that, too. Yeah. I mean, it's just Loomis was such a career-defining role for him. Jamie Lee Curtis became a scream queen with that movie. She did, like, Terror Train and Prom Night and things like that. And, you know, I just think Halloween's the bee's knees.
The bee's knees.
The bee's knees.
Yeah. Actually, I think Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee were both up for the role of Loomis as well.
I'm glad they went with Donald Pleasance.
Yeah, Lee's come out and said that that was a big error in his part and he wished he had taken that role. But, I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, because Donald Pleasance took that role, you just can't see
him. He's Loomis.
He was perfect.
No matter what.
He was perfect. So, well, that's all we got to say about Halloween, other than...
it's the most amazing Carpenter movie.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Yeah. I mean, and probably the best, well, one of the best slasher movies.
It is the best slasher movie ever made.
It's certainly the one I can go back to over and over and not be bored.
Without a doubt, the best slasher movie ever made.
Better than Texas Chainsaw?
Yes.
All right.
I flip-flop between the two as my favorite horror movie of all time.
Yeah.
But I really love Halloween.
Yeah, Halloween's pretty great. So the next one I'd like to bring up is Escape from New York. Just because that's probably the one I watched the most when I was young.
That's the one that I first noticed Kurt Russell. My boy, Kurt.
Your man crush, Kurt.
Oh, I do have a man crush on Kurt Russell.
So,
I admit it.
You know what? I just want to say, to people that are listening right now, I know we're sounding like harsh fanboys right now, so our apologies, but, you know, we are talking about John Carpenter, so...
How can you not?
Okay. So, Escape from New York...
I'm going to say that we might sound like fanboys now, but just wait. There's going to be some movies that are brought up that we're not quite fanboys about, I'm sure.
Perfect. So Escape from New York is a story of an iconic... another iconic character that Carpenter created called Snake Plissken. And he's played by Kurt Russell, and basically he's this... sort of badass convict guy that's brought out of prison to go into New York City, like the island of Manhattan, to rescue the president who's been kidnapped and is in this war zone, basically, that Manhattan's become, because the island of Manhattan's basically been turned into a prison. So they put all the criminals into Manhattan to sort of fend for themselves.
Yeah, it's very post-apocalyptic.
Yeah. So Snake Plissken...
What year was that set? 97?
Was it 1990? No. Really? 2000.
Fuck, well, that shit didn't happen.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
Well, it didn't happen whenever. I think it was 97.
Yeah, maybe you're right. You're probably right. So you're more right about stuff like that.
Well, go on. Sorry.
So Snake Plissken lands on the roof of the World Trade Center and basically has to go through this sort of post-apocalyptic looking wasteland to try and find
the president played by
Donald Pleasance.
Did you mention that he has those capsules in him that he doesn't do the mission, he's gonna die?
Yeah, so one of the things that the man does to make sure he doesn't...
He oppresses everybody.
So make sure he doesn't just go in there and disappear, is that they put these poison capsules in him. So if he doesn't get the president back within a certain time frame, that Snake Plissken will die. Now, Snake Plissken, Kurt Russell said that it's his favorite role that he's
ultra cool. Plissken.
He is the ultimate cool dude.
I mean, that eye patch.
He's got an
eye
patch. That
swagger.
Yeah, he talks like Clint Eastwood.
Oh, yeah.
He's great. And this is one of these movies that just has so much going for it due to Carpenter's writing. And just the way the whole thing plays out.
Well, yeah, and it's also got, like, Adrian Barbeau and Harry Dean Stanton and people like that. And Isaac Hayes.
Ernest Borgnine. Yeah. It's this great cast of characters.
Oh, yeah.
So Harry Dean Stanton plays this scientist guy called Brain, who helps Snake out. Adrian Barbeau's sort of Brain sidekick.
Yeah, and Isaac Hayes is, like, one of the gang leaders there.
Yeah.
It's just awesome. Awesome casting.
Yeah, he's got this big... like pimp mobile that has like chandeliers on it. Mm-hmm. It's so great. And so Snake basically has to go through the city and
all these burnt out buildings.
Yeah, and he has to fight this wrestler guy. And
yeah, that seems cool.
Yeah, it's a great flick. So highly recommended as well. And
well, yeah, and that ending of that movie is epic too. I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah,
but that last shot in that movie. I beam every time I see it just because it's so much, so awesome.
Yeah.
It's so Snake.
Yeah. So what this did, though, is it showed that, because Carpenter, so far in his career, he had done a Siege movie with Assault on Precinct 13, and then he went right into Halloween, and then he did, a couple of TV movies.
Yeah, he did the Elvis biopic, which is the first time he worked with Kurt Russell because Kurt Russell played Elvis in it.
Yeah, which did show that he could do more, but it was still the Elvis biopic was a TV movie.
Yeah,
and then he did The Fog, and then he did Escape from New York. So what Escape from New York did, though, is it showed that Carpenter was capable of handling more than horror. It showed that he was not just a horror director, and he could also handle action. He could also handle sci-fi, and he could create another really famous character. And it also showed, as was also seen in Assault from Precinct 13, but it showed that Carpenter had an affinity for the anti-hero, which was something that we, have seen throughout his career, where, the heroes in Carpenter movies are not always, they're not the perfect sort of Tom Cruise action heroes. They're like guys that have problems.
Well, yeah, and which makes them more realistic in a way.
Yeah.
And also makes you more willing to root for them.
Yeah.
Because, human beings in general are flawed. And to have a pretty boy like Tom Cruise being your hero and getting everything he wants and doing everything he intends to do makes it less likely. Like, he's not an everyman like Snake Plissken is.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes Snake Plissken cool, is just because you could be like, I could go to a bar with Snake and like chug back some beers with him and it'd be cool. Whereas with Tom Cruise, you just probably want to hit him in the mouth the entire time you're in the bar, right?
It's true, right?
So, I mean, yeah, Escape from New York's awesome. We kind of won't mention Escape from LA too much, which was...
Well, you just mentioned it, man.
Well, I mean, I said we won't mention it too much apart from the fact that you should avoid it.
Well, I saw it in the theaters and I don't remember...
Snake Plissken is not meant to surf.
True. But was he cool? Like, Pam Grier was in that. Like, how bad could it be?
It's not very good. Yeah. Bruce Campbell's in it, too. Take that for what you want, depending on how much you love Bruce Campbell. But I don't know. I didn't think it was necessary.
Wasn't necessary, that's for sure. But was it that terrible?
I didn't like it.
Have you seen it since it came out?
I haven't seen it in at least 15 years, but... I didn't like it. I remember I was so disappointed in it, and I was just like, I don't know what tone they were going for. I think maybe they were going for more camp with the sequel. I don't know. Maybe I'll watch it again if it's on Netflix or something. I don't know. I'm just, I don't like my Escape from New York memories to be tainted, that's all.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious about watching Escape from LA again, just because I am kind of like, how do you fuck up a character like that?
It does have a sweet soundtrack, if nothing else.
Does it?
I like it.
Why?
Well, it's got like Stabbing Westward and Butthole Surfers and all these alternative bands on it that I kind of dig.
Okay.
It's got a song by Sugar Ray on it before I knew who Sugar Ray was, before they sold out and became poppy when they did actual rock music.
Did they used to be good?
Yeah, they used to be okay.
Oh, really?
Their first album friggin' had a picture of, like, Amy Dolan's naked on the cover. How can you go wrong with
Nicolette
that
shit? Sheridan, I think.
Or Nicolette Sheridan, was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever. Sure. What, Lemonade and Brownies?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Come on. That's a pretty great
Lemonade
cover.
And Brownies.
That's a pretty great cover.
Come on. Lemonade and Brownies. Think about it for a minute. Anyway, I want to go to the next movie now, if we're done with Escape.
Yep.
Since we've mentioned it twice already, my next choice is Assault on Precinct 13.
Yep.
Because we have mentioned it. This is probably the movie that is most evident Carpenter's love for Howard Hawks. Because it's totally like a siege movie, but it's a Western kind of siege movie.
Yeah.
And it's got a lot of Howard Hawks touches to it. It's pretty...
Most evidently Rio Bravo.
Yeah, Rio Bravo with the dash of Night of the Living Dead. That's been said before.
Oh, has it?
Because it's, yeah, it's kind of like Rio Bravo meets Night of the Living Dead in a way, because it's, you know, they get stuck in this precinct with these gangs surrounding them and they have to try and get out. It's kind of like Zombies, but like guys with guns in a way, I guess.
Basically, this guy's on the street with his daughter. His granddaughter.
I think it's his daughter.
And anyway, played by Kim Richards from Tough Turf. And
Tough Turf.
And later on, The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
What?
Yeah.
Tough Turf.
Did you know that Kim Richards is Paris Hilton's aunt?
No.
Isn't that weird?
That's weird. Tough Turf.
Tough Turf, yes. Okay, so... Anyway, Kim Richards plays the daughter of this guy, and she goes to get an ice cream.
That scene is awesome.
Shot in the face.
That scene is awesome.
By this gang.
I feel actually bad for liking that, but I think it's awesome.
It's so awesome.
I really do feel bad for liking that, sort of.
So this guy is all distraught and shit, so he shoots one of the gang members, and actually that gang member was that really freaky guy from Escape New York, that hisses. That guy? Anyway, he's a gang member. Anyway, the other two gang members are chasing him, so he goes to this abandoned police station that's only housed by a police chief who's just sort of taking over temporarily while this
precinct shuts down. Yeah, they're just preparing it to be shut down.
Yeah. And that guy's played by Austin Stoker. And then this prison bus ends up getting sidetracked there. I can't remember why, but they end up going there to hold up for the night, and the prisoners are put into the cells. And at that point, the gang has now followed the guy who sought refuge in there and have surrounded the precinct and are trying to basically kill everyone inside.
Yeah, it was pre-Halloween, but I feel like it already established Carpenter as a director to watch.
Oh, yeah. Because
it was very stylish, very tense, very, like, you could see his style right away. Like, he's a guy, he's a muscular director, right?
Yeah.
Like, and you could see that in Assault on Precinct 13. I mean, it's low budget, and you can see the low budget sometimes, but that doesn't take away from the fact that it's a really, like, it's a siege movie.
Yeah.
And it's one of the better siege movies.
Absolutely.
Because you're worried these people who are trapped in there are not going to get out.
Especially given, like, the people that are in there. And it really shows, like, again, the anti-hero theme is there.
Mm-hmm.
The lead villain, or the, not villain, but the lead convict played by Darwin Jostin is a bad dude. I mean, this guy, I think he's a murderer, but you're on his side pretty much right away. The group inside have to find a way to, like, fight this outside force. So, yeah, very reminiscent of Night of the Living Dead. But, yeah, the anti-hero theme comes up. The Western theme comes up. The isolation theme comes up.
It's very...
All these things that Carpenter explored a lot later in his career.
Plus, it's a huge nod to Howard Hawks.
Huge nod to Howard
Hawks. I mean, and that's... that's good that he can show his influences like that and run with it.
Yeah.
And I if you guys really want to see that movie, which you should, definitely get that Scream Factory Blu-ray because it's pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
Great. Well, the next one I'll bring up is... We haven't really talked about Big Trouble in Little China yet.
No, we mentioned it.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is we both watched it kind of in preparation for this.
Yeah, and it's actually a Carpenter movie that sort of has... It's sort of... I kind of forgot about. I saw it when I was young. I mean, it came out in 1986. So I was young. And
he doesn't want to give his age.
I was a teenager at the time. And
he just did. He's old.
And I didn't really like it that much then. I mean, I thought it was fun, but I didn't hit me the way The Thing and Halloween and Escape from New York hit me.
Well, I still find it to be a lesser movie compared to those ones you just mentioned.
Well, yes. I mean, yeah. I agree. But watching it now, especially with my knowledge of Hong Kong action cinema and mm-hmm. Shaw Brothers, you can really see what Carpenter was trying to do. Back when I first saw this, I didn't understand Chinese action movies.
Yeah.
And this was clearly Carpenter's attempt to... Almost
it was
combined.
It was his batshit Kung Fu Shaw Brothers movie yeah, is it what was
it was. It was a Chinese, like a Hong Kong action movie directed by a white dude.
Yeah, with a hero who's not really much of a hero.
And again, he's not a perfect guy. Like what Carpenter sort of said, and I think Kurt Russell also said, that what they were going for is Jack Burton, who's the character Russell plays, he's more of a sidekick.
Yeah, he really is, because he's like this truck driver who's like, he's got this big ego, and he's always like, it's all in the reflexes, and he's acting all cool and everything, but really, he's inept at what he does.
Exactly.
There's a scene in the movie where he knocks himself out by shooting a gun at the ceiling, and all the rocks fall on his head, and he misses like a whole bunch of battles that go on because he's kind of inept. But that's what kind of makes it more appealing, is that it's kind of funny that way.
Well, it's a really interesting take, because Wang Chi, the Dennis Dunn, who plays Wang Chi, is the other male sort of male lead, and he's like this kung fu master who's like kicking ass all over the place. And then Jack Burton is
swaggering around going after Kim Cattrall, who wouldn't back in the 80s go after Kim Cattrall, right? And he's just like, yeah, baby, I'm awesome. It's me, Pork Chop Express. It's all in the reflexes.
He does kind of save the day.
He does a little bit,
But I can see what they were going for.
I love Jack Burton, don't get me wrong.
But when I heard that Jack was more like the sidekick who was pretending he was a hero, it's really kind of an interesting take on the movie. Another thing I thought was, you know, and I watched this with my girlfriend, and I'm not sure what she thought about the racial stereotypes of the Asian American community, but I thought it was really cool what Carpenter was doing there. I mean, here you've got a white guy, John Carpenter and Kurt Russell, and I guess Kim Cattrall, starring in this movie, and they're bringing all these Asian actors into this American action movie.
I didn't find it disrespectful.
I didn't find it disrespectful at all.
I mean, one of the main guys who kind of is the crux of everything is he's an Asian.
James Hong. Yeah.
No, wasn't he the bad guy?
Yeah, he was the bad guy.
No, I'm talking about the other guy, the bus driver,
guy, Victor Wong.
And he's like kind of like, he's into the mystic arts, and he kind of like is the one who like has part of this rivalry with James Hong. And the way they handled that is like, they were more important characters really than the white people in the movie. So I don't find it disrespectful.
No, and it was cool because, you know, all these Asian American actors probably wouldn't have, like, especially back in the 80s, they weren't getting leading roles. And here we have a movie that's basically an Asian action movie that just happens to have a couple white guys in it. And
a hot Kim Cattrall.
But anyway, it was really fun. I really enjoyed this, watching this again. And, you know, I kind of feel bad that I've kind of forgotten about it over the years. One thing I mean, it's certainly not on the same level as the other movies we mentioned, like Chris said. But one thing that I found really interesting about this movie is why this didn't become a franchise. I mean, Jack Burton is a pretty iconic character. Again, another great
character. Well, it's another case of it flopping and finding its audience on video, though.
True.
And but I mean,
still, you would have thought that there would be a sequel somewhere.
Well, they have kind of continued it lately because there is a new comic book series out now that is actually co-written by Carpenter that follows more adventures of Jack Burton that's just been out this year. So that's
and Carpenter's involved with that.
Yeah, he co-writes the stories on them.
Oh, that's cool.
So I mean, so it's kind of like, I guess it's the sequel he never got to make.
Huh.
I guess, if you look at it that way.
I wonder if he's thinking about making that.
I don't think he'd get the money to make
it. I wonder if Carpenter's even going to direct another movie.
He might. But yeah. I don't think there's going to be another Big Trouble in our future. I don't believe so. I mean, it's a fun movie. It's entertaining. It's silly. It's probably the silliest movie John Carpenter has ever made.
Yeah.
And it's got some great effects by Richard Edlund.
Yeah.
Who did some stuff in Star Wars and everything. He's got some good creature effects in there, but it's all about Kurt Russell's swagger to me. Jack Burton is just, he's not as good as Snake Plissken, but he's pretty damn close.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after we talk about Big Trouble, let's move on to another one that's got a swagger kind of anti-hero, kick-ass kind of guy. And you know where I'm going with this, don't you, Josh?
I do.
It's a little movie we call They Live. With Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Yep.
Who is, he's kind of like this homeless guy. And he, kind of a transient, he stumbles around. But one day he comes across this box of like these sunglasses. And what these sunglasses do is they kind of show him subliminal messages. Because it turns out like society's being run by these alien-like beings who are like putting subliminal messages and saying, purchase, buy. It's very, very, very like... big dig on commercialism and being a consumer and everything like that. Like, it's a very, very satirical movie. And he kind of becomes this anti-hero where he has to stop all these alien-like creatures who have like who are posing as human beings, but basically like running America, really. And it's a really fun movie, I find. It's like a lot of rebellion themes in it. A lot of like quotable lines, like, obviously. I mean, the scene where he walks into the bank alone, and he's like, I came here to do two things. I chew gum and kick ass, and I'm all out of gum.
Yeah.
And, you know, stuff like that. There's that awesome alleyway wrestling match he has.
Yeah, with, it's more like a fist fight.
Yeah, it's like Keith a wrestling David, match. Yeah. He suplexes the dude and everything, right? There's that. I mean, Rowdy Roddy Piper, his first movie.
So that's a 5-minute, like a 5 or 10
it's like a 10-minute brawl
fight between Keith David and Rowdy Roddy
Piper.
It's
awesome. It's like one of the best scenes in the movie.
Yeah.
And I mean, and Rowdy Roddy Piper, unproven in movies. I think it was like his second movie, I think.
Was this before or after Hell Comes to Frogtown? I think it
was right after Hell Comes to Frogtown, which was like his first movie, which you should seek out if you're into weird shit. But I mean, They Live. It's a fun movie. And again, it's not quite on the level of some of the better Carpenter stuff, I don't think, personally. But I have a lot of fun with it. It's got a lot of quotable stuff in it. And
I rewatched it recently, and I didn't enjoy it nearly as much as I hoped.
Yeah, it's just that I like the Big Brother's watching you theme of the movie. I thought that was interesting in the 80s when everything was ruled by greed and power and money.
Yeah.
That he would make a movie about, you know, that kind of stuff, like Big Brother's watching you, like kind of 1984 George Orwell-ish kind of themes to the movie, right? But with Rowdy Roddy Piper running around kicking ass. And considering that Rowdy Roddy Piper was like one of my favorite wrestlers in the 80s.
Yeah.
So awesome to see him starring in this John Carpenter sci-fi action movie, right?
No, it was pretty cool at the time. But you know what I find really funny about that movie is there's actually a company out right now, a clothing company that's putting out Obey t-shirts and hats and shit.
Isn't that what the company's called, is Obey?
Yeah, but it's the same text as from They Live.
Rip-off artist. It's Carpenter fucking, should get some money from
no,
them.
But it's just like the weirdest thing. It's so ironic, right? Because people are like buying this shit.
I see people wearing
that. That says Obey. They're basically just following and
yeah,
because
like that was the main message. That was the main message of the aliens in that movie was obey. Really,
that was one of the things that came up when he put on the glasses.
A lot when he wore those glasses was the words obey.
So
right?
I thought, fuck, is like they live like on this like major like is it like making this crossover into the mainstream all of a sudden?
Maybe.
But no, it's like this weird. It's this weird thing where this company has made these obey shirts and it's become a bit of a fashion trend. I don't know if it's like that anymore. I know I saw it earlier this year, like in January. I saw them all over the place.
I still see people wearing it.
Yeah, it's weird.
I never thought of it that way though. I'm glad you brought that up because that never really clicked for me in my head the parallels to They Live.
Totally.
Like, it's
the same text. It's like just like click in my
head. It didn't click in my head. I just looked at it and said, oh, fuck, is this the next tap out shit?
I know. And dude, I looked at the shit and I actually took off my sunglasses to make sure I wasn't tripping
That's
out.
That's awesome. but yeah, I think They Live is fun. And it's another one that Shout put out as a collector's edition that's worth picking up, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't find it to be his greatest work, but I do really enjoy it. I mean... It's fun. It's Rowdy Roddy Piper.
It is.
It's not a post-apocalyptic movie where he's the only guy who can knock up women while there's these frog monsters after him, like Hell Comes to Frogtown. But it's still pretty fun. Obviously, I would have preferred Kurt Russell in the title role, but...
Oh, fuck.
I know. I'm going to talk about Kurt Russell a lot. Sorry. Yeah. What do you got for me, Josh?
Well, we are starting to get near the end of our time. But we've got about 10 minutes left, so we'll just talk about a few more.
Okay.
Another one that, again, I haven't seen this one for years, but it did sort of strike me a lot when I was younger, mainly because I had a big crush on Karen Allen from Raiders of the Lost Ark. But that's Starman. I don't think you've seen this one.
I have not seen Starman. I'm kind of ashamed to admit it.
Yeah, and I do want to check it out again because it's been, I haven't seen this since I was, a teenager. But it really struck me at the time. Jeff Bridges is in the leading role.
That's probably his most serious movie, right?
Jeff Bridges?
No, Carpenter. Yeah.
Possibly. I mean, I don't remember how serious it was. It's about this alien that comes down to Earth, and basically Karen Allen comes across him and basically befriends him. But I don't remember a lot more of the plot from that. I do remember there's a couple of, cute scenes where he like runs a red light when he's learning how to drive. And there was also there was a song that he liked to sing, but I can't remember what it was. But it's just notable because it does show a different side of Carpenter. And this was made at the sort of peak of his career, and it did earn Jeff Bridges an Oscar
nomination.
He made it right after Christine, and like I said, Bridges got an Oscar nomination, which I don't think a lot of people associate with Carpenter. They don't think, oh, I'm going to get an Oscar-nominated performance if I work with John Carpenter. But it did happen early in Carpenter's career. And I never really understood why Carpenter never did break out into being more of an A-list director. He never did quite make it that way. But this should have been his spring
point. I should check that one out. I've never seen it.
Yeah, it's a good flick.
Another movie I want to kind of revisit is In the Mouth of Madness.
Yeah, with Sam Neill. That one. Yeah.
I remember I didn't like it, but now that I've been like, it's now like 20, almost 20 years old, and I just keep hearing like how it's very Lovecraftian.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big Lovecraft.
And I mean, and a lot of people seem to really love that movie, so I really want to revisit that one sometime in the future, I think.
Yeah.
I think maybe...
I don't think we need to talk about Christine very much.
No, we talked about that last week, or two episodes ago, on episode two,
the Stephen King episode. So if you want to hear about Christine, you can listen to that.
So why don't we just like maybe...
We haven't talked about The Fog.
Yeah, we can talk about The Fog.
Now it's, again, like, it's not nearly as cool as Halloween with me. And, you know, The Fog was fraught with a lot of problems as well. I mean, I know when Carpenter first shot The Fog, he hated it and had to go back and reshoot a bunch of it and basically redo the movie. So... I think it kind of shows.
Yeah.
I mean, I know some people, this is their favorite Carpenter movie.
I like certain things about it.
It's got certain things.
I like the pirate ghost guys coming out of the fog. Those are cool, striking shots.
It's striking. Barbeau's great.
I like Adrian Barbeau as Stevie James.
Yeah.
Or Stevie Wayne, sorry.
Stevie Wayne, yeah.
And I do like, there is a lot of like kind of creepy, ominous mood to it. I mean,
yeah, it's not terrible. I mean, Janet Leigh's in it with her
Jamie Lee Curtis
with her daughter,
and it's definitely better than the 2005 piece of shit that was remade from.
Other than Maggie Grace's ass, there was nothing going for that.
Oh.
What can I say? It's right in the trailer. But yeah, I mean, The Fog is regarded as one of Carpenter's classics. Not one of my favorites, but certainly one I'd like. I'm going to pick up the Scream Factory Blu-ray, and I think I'll probably have a new appreciation of it then.
I think another one, too, that speaking of new appreciations that I've learned is Prince of Darkness.
Right.
From 87. I remember when it first came out, I was excited because it was John Carpenter. And, you know, when you're a kid, you're like, oh, John Carpenter. I didn't like it at all.
Right.
When I was a kid, it was just too much metaphysical religious babble for it, and I just didn't appreciate it for what it is. I don't think it's a great movie, but because it's basically about people like going into a church and examining this container of this liquid in the cellar. It's kind of got something to do with the Antichrist. It's got Donald Pleasance in it again as a priest, and Alice Cooper is a homeless guy who gets killed and everything. Spoiler, sorry. But it's got some cool effects. It's got some cool mood, and like, any movie where you can see a guy fall apart in a sea of roaches is okay by me.
Nice.
So we got to vote five.
I was just kind of bored with Prince of Darkness, but yeah.
You should
put it out again. You like should on re-see Blu-ray.
It. I think so, you'd appreciate it more, like I did.
Yeah, I think I'll pick that up along with Body Bags, which is an anthology movie that Carpenter did.
I think you should just kind of for Carpenter, we're gonna just say you should avoid. For me, I say you should avoid Vampires. You should avoid Ghosts of Mars, and you should probably avoid Village of the Damned remake.
Okay, and I disagree with Vampires and Ghosts of Mars, but I think I'm in the minority on that. I did have fun with both.
Ghosts of Mars, fucking Marilyn Manson alien guy attacking people. It's got Pam Grier in it.
Pam Grier's in it.
And they can't, well, I guess Pam Grier's
in it.
Pam Grier kind of makes it a little bit worthwhile, but we got a couple minutes here, so why don't we quickly...
Oh, and I just want to also mention, Carpenter did two episodes of Masters of Horror. He did Cigarette Burns and Pro-Life.
Yep.
I don't have much to say about Pro-Life. I don't even really remember it, to be honest. But Cigarette Burns did stand out quite a bit as well. It starred Norman Reedus, who's in Walking Dead. He plays Daryl in Walking Dead. And it also starred Udo Kier.
I haven't seen a lot of Masters of Horror. I haven't seen that one.
That episode was pretty cool.
Because I've only seen, like, Dear Woman by John Landis and, like, the one that Lucky McKee did.
Right.
And I liked the Lucky McKee one. And the Don Coscarelli one was a good one, too.
Yeah, that was a good one.
But, I mean, yeah.
But Carpenter's, this episode, Cigarette Burns, it was a really cool story.
I heard Cigarette Burns shows that he still had it, kind of.
It did. I mean, it was about this guy, Norman Reedus, looking for this movie that basically, if it's screened, it causes riots. So he's like this film collector.
Sounds like fun.
Trying to find this movie. And then it's really moody. It's really dark. It's really cool.
Maybe so I'll check that one out.
Of Carpenter's later work, that's probably what I'd recommend more than anything.
Let me check. So we'll wrap her up just because we want
to. Yeah, we have to wrap it up.
We don't want to go over time here. If you don't know who John Carpenter is, I don't know why you're really listening to us right now. We know he's amazing. We wish he would make more stuff, obviously, but what he's left behind will always stay with us.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. I cannot, as a person, say the effect of The Thing, the effect of Assault on Precinct 13, Halloween, Big Trouble in Little China, Christine, all these kind of movies. They've affected me growing up. They were very important to me growing up, and that's why I think John Carpenter is a very important figure. He's also, like Josh said, one of those guys who did really make us appreciate directors because his name was above the title. I think you're right. He's one of the first guys where I kind of noticed that kind of stuff. Like, who's this guy?
Yeah.
He must be important.
Yeah.
And I think that's really something to take away from this. I really wish he could make another movie, and a movie that's more like the Carpenter I know and love. But if he doesn't, I'm perfectly happy with what he's done.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's left behind such a legacy, it doesn't even matter.
I'm perfectly happy with what he's done.
And I think we should start looking at some of these guys like that a little more. I mean, people are always down on these directors that have, you know, have sort of maybe lost their way or lost their desire. But really, who cares? These guys have left this legacy of awesomeness. And Carpenter is...
The guy managed to make my favorite horror movie of all time. He gets a pass automatically.
Yeah, you can't fault that. So on that note, we'll wrap this up, and hopefully you enjoyed hearing our thoughts about the master,
Mr. JC.
Yeah, and as usual, please check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/GBW podcast.
Visit our website, www.thevideograveyard.com, and also you can follow us on Twitter at Video Graveyard. And please go to iTunes and subscribe and rate us if you like what you hear, and we will hopefully hear from you again in the near future.
Great. Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you.
Bye.